1、2、3。
Welcome back to the Voices in Japan podcast. If you would like to listen to this episode ad-free, you can sign up for our Patreon account. We also have bonus episodes and other extra content coming soon, so please check it out. Link in the episode description.
This episode is brought to you by Rizutsu Lodges, open all year round, located 5 minutes walk to the main Rizutsu ski resort gondola. There are Japanese, Western, and apartment-style rooms with breakfast packages available. There's a Japanese sento, or public bath, two convenience stores less than a minute walk, ski room and tune-up tables, plenty of free parking space, and summer barbecue packages available. Check out the website and more information at rizutsulodges.com.
I know we talk about the weather like all the time, so keep this quick, but man, pretty surprising how much snow we're getting here in March, especially considering spring came to Hokkaido in February, and all of a sudden it's been winter pretty much in March.
We have had a lot of snow, but it's also been pretty warm, like the temperature's been up and down. So today, it's around 4 degrees. Yesterday was 7, I think, in town. But the mountains are still getting quite a bit of snow. So over the weekend, there was a 20-centimeter dump on Sunday.
Oh, nice.
Our Sunday. Didn't make it up there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was hoping to go on the Monday, but then they had no new snow. But apparently, this next few days, there should be more snow coming. So March is actually looking pretty good.
Very, very surprising how much it's been falling. We should also say, unfortunately, Matt Mateo is not with us today. He's got some other things going on. So we're just recording the two of us. A little sad to not have Matt here, but
back to the old days.
Back to the very, very old days.
When was the last time we recorded just me and you, Berg? It's been a while, right?
Has been. I think there's been maybe one or two in there when maybe Matt was busy or something.
I did remember doing quite a few with just me and Matt, and I think you and Matt did a few as well. But yeah, it feels good.
Feels good. Feels very good.
Yes.
Without Matt.
Hope you're enjoying yourself, Matt, wherever you are.
Exactly. But he did want us to mention some media news. There's been actually a bunch of big media news for Japan going on recently. I don't know if you saw, but the creator of Dragon Ball, the popular manga and what else? There's anime and even films. Mr. Akira Toriyama unfortunately passed away on March 1st. The cause of death was acute subdural hematoma, which is a type of bleeding near the brain, apparently. But yeah, Dragon Ball is something that's popular around the world. Debuted back in 1984. I think I remember you saying you are not a fan.
I'm shaking my head here. To be honest, when I was a kid, Dragon Ball wasn't big in England. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So my wife kind of mentioned this news to me as well when she heard it. And she was, oh, Dragon Ball's massive. And I was like, yeah, I didn't know much about it. And she was kind of surprised that it wasn't big in England. But I haven't been there since, 2007. So maybe it got big after I left. Because on the news, when this news came out, they were interviewing kind of foreigners in Japan. And there were British people that they interviewed as well. And she was like, look, come on, it must be popular. They're British. But they were in their 30s. So I'm 42. So I guess it's a different generation. So my generation, Dragon Ball was not big.
Actually, now you say it, like I didn't really get into it. And I think if I remember back, yeah, same. Like in the U.S., it was kind of becoming popular as I was kind of older. But I do have a lot of Asian friends in the U.S. who are big and still are big fans of Dragon Ball. So apparently, even some people our age are into it, but it said that to many fans, the main character, I guess the name is Son Goku, his journey from being a kid who fumbles his martial arts training to becoming a high-flying hero who can shoot bolts of electricity from his hand, this story mirrors their own struggles against self-doubt as they grew into adulthood. So apparently he had a lot of other things that he was still planning to release. He wasn't too old. I think he was in his late 60s. 60s or something. So yeah, big news in Japan that he unfortunately passed away. Some other big media news, and actually what Matt wanted us to mention, was that Godzilla Minus One, that movie won its first Oscar for the whole Godzilla series, and they won for Best Visual Effects. Did you see it? You didn't see it, have you?
The movie?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. I know a few people that have and said it's, yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
But it's not the first one, but it's the one of the ones that's not made by Hollywood, right? Like the... There was the Matthew Broderick one. I think that was the first one.
Right, we talked about that, and you guys laughed at me because I was trying to sing the theme song. That's the only thing I remember. Yeah.
But there's apparently another new one coming out, like a Godzilla versus Kong that I keep seeing advertised on YouTube and stuff like that.
And that's Hollywood?
That's a Hollywood one. Yeah, so I think it's nothing to do with the Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah, this is from the same, I think, director who's done most of them. His name is Takashi Yamazaki. And for those who don't know, the story is set in post-World War II Tokyo. And the monster itself, experts say, was originally created as a metaphor for the ills of atomic weapons and testing. And I didn't know this, but the creature's heavily furrowed skin or scales are imagined to resemble the keloid or keloid scars of the Japanese survivors of the two atomic bombs. So that's pretty dark.
Mm.
But yeah, that's why he has the skin that he has. And this is big news because, yeah, it won the first Oscar for the Godzilla series. But for anyone who has been paying attention to the Oscar news, also knows that another big atomic bomb-related movie also did quite well.
Did that win Best Movie, I'm guessing? I think it did.
I think it won, yeah, Best Movie and like six other awards, including
the one that
Best
we
Actor.
Haven't seen all of.
Are you the one who watched a little bit of it?
I was the same as you. I got around halfway, took a break for a few days or a week or so, but I think I ended up watching it all. Yeah,
oh, really?
I did watch it all.
You watched it to the end?
Yeah, but not in one sitting. So,
oh, okay.
Because it was long.
So what's your review?
It was good. I'm not sure if I would have selected it for best movie of the year. I think there were more original ideas that could have won.
What were some of the, did you know any of the other movies that were nominated?
I'm not sure if Barbie was nominated.
Oh, it might have been. You would have gone
for original scripts movie. There was one with the girl who, she won best actress.
Emily Blunt.
Not Emily Blunt.
Or the girl that was in the movie with Ryan Gosling.
Emma Stone. So the movie she was in, which I haven't seen, but I've heard it's very original, it's very unique. So that is the kind of movie I think should deserve to win the Oscars. I think that won, you know, what are the other awards that they have? Golden Globes, is that?
Golden Globes.
I think it won Golden Globes, and I think it won like a BAFTA as well.
Oh, really?
So the ones before the Oscar, but, you know, everyone always says the Oscar's the main one.
Yeah. Well, they apparently went all in for Oppenheimer at the Oscars, won 7 awards. But the interesting thing is this director of Godzilla, Takashi Yamazaki, says that he is now considering developing a movie that responds to Cillian Murphy's Oppenheimer. He thinks that it's kind of important now to kind of give a movie about Oppenheimer, or I don't know if it's about an Oppenheimer, but kind of maybe dovetails off that to obviously show the Japanese kind of perspective, obviously, of the atomic bomb. But the interesting thing is this director, he has seen the movie Oppenheimer, and as we've talked about before, it has not been released yet in Japan, but he went to Taiwan in order to see the movie, but he had to watch it with Chinese subtitles over there because he said his English is not that great. And he says, I don't think I fully understood the nuance of what was happening in the film, but it was definitely like very impactful. And they're actually showing a special screening of Oppenheimer in Hiroshima this week for high school students that is being organized by the president of the city's International Film Festival, who has called the film very America-centric, obviously. But she now wants people. She was kind of like many Japanese, there are obviously mixed feelings about the Oppenheimer movie, but she says she now wants people to see the movie to spur discussion. And they're also planning to have a screening of Oppenheimer in Nagasaki as well. Those are the two cities where the atomic bomb was dropped. And I think the movie itself is being released at the end of March, across theaters in Japan. So it's taken quite some time to get released here.
Are you going to go watch it?
Oppenheimer?
Yeah, you're going to finish it?
Maybe I'll walk in during the second half, so I can watch the second half. I don't know, man. I kind of feel like now that it's getting all this attention, I should probably know about it at least, so I am planning to watch it at some point. 3 hours, though, I don't know if I can find someone to sit through a three-hour movie with me in the theater. I don't know. Are you planning to watch it again?
I was thinking about it, but it is long, and I'll probably won't watch in the cinema. I'll probably just stream it again or something. Mm-hmm. Watch it at home, maybe take breaks. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I should watch it in one sitting rather than, you know, spending a couple of weeks to watch it instead.
Did the full
appreciate
effect.
It more. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, there was those two. And actually, just wrapping up here, there was also some other Japanese films that did well at the Oscars. The Hayao, is that how you say his name?
I think so, yeah.
Miyazaki's film, he's the famous animator. The Boy and the Heron, which also has a story that centers on a young boy grappling with the grief of losing his mother during an air raid in Tokyo. That won Best Animated Feature Film. And a movie called War is Over, inspired by the music of John and Yoko. That's obviously John Lennon and Yoko Ono. That won Best Animated Short Film. So a lot of Japanese success with the Oscars. Oh, by the way, here's the craziest thing about the Godzilla movie. It was shot on a budget of only $15 million, which is like nothing for obviously... big action Hollywood movies, right?
You haven't seen it, right?
I have not. I want to see it now after hearing all this.
I wonder if there's any big stars in it, like maybe some famous Japanese actors.
I don't know, but you know...
Ken Watanabe, maybe? I think he's been all the Godzilla movies.
Yeah, or that guy from Shogun.
Yeah.
Tanaka
Yuki or something?
Sanada. Yeah. He's awesome.
Yeah. But they probably can't afford him if they're only making that movie on $15 million.
Exactly. Yeah. But it grossed or earned $105 million worldwide and $56 million at the North American box office, which makes it the highest grossing Japanese language live action film ever released in America.
Wow. So I wonder if they'll do another one, like Godzilla Minus 2 or something.
Yeah. I wonder what the Minus 1 is about. We should probably know that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. True. I don't know. If anyone has seen this movie overseas or whatever, yeah, and you think we should see it, let us know.
I did hearing another podcast, American podcast of those guys watching it, and they loved it as well. It said it was the best one out of all the Godzilla movies. Recommended it. A lot more, you know, it wasn't like just action. There's had a lot more kind of feel to it, deeper, you know, like you said, when you're describing about the scales and stuff, how it kind of relates to humanity a bit more instead of all these like special effects and stuff. So very different from your standard Godzilla movie.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious to see it. I also want to watch that series Shogun. Is apparently doing really well.
Good reviews.
Very good reviews.
I've seen a lot of advertisements for that. I think it's on Apple TV, maybe something like that.
Apple TV and Disney Plus, maybe or something. But yeah, they're all saying that they worked really hard. Apparently, the original that was released in, like in the 80s took a lot of cinematic justice in portraying Japan. But apparently, this one is fairly accurate, and all the famous Japanese actors said they would only participate with conditions, like they would have actual Japanese actors in the movie and stuff.
Nice.
So anyways, yeah, good stuff going on in the media for Japan, which is all actually kind of interesting, and we'll talk about maybe later with today's topic. But apparently there's a big push to get a lot more, I mean, by the Japanese government, but also overseas governments, to kind of get Japanese pop culture more exposed and out in the rest of the world as a way of helping to promote Japan and stuff. So, yeah, it's good to see some of these pop culture items doing well overseas.
Mm. what are we talking about today? We're talking about Japanese travelers are more stressed than other travelers when they're sitting on a plane next to strangers. So yeah, kind of comparing stress levels of travelers when they're on planes.
I'm going to say this right from the start that I'm always happy when I get on an airplane, especially for an overseas trip, and I know that I'm sitting next to a Japanese person instead of a non-Japanese person, because I kind of feel like they're going to be much easier travel mate.
You don't have to talk to them?
That's one thing, yep, that's probably going to come up. But actually, even when they're sitting in the middle, sometimes I'm kind of worried that they're going to be too shy, and we'll talk about it in a little bit, to talk. So I'm kind of wondering, like, are they going to be able to get out to use the restroom when they want? But they're all, you know, say, raise their voice when they need to get out to the bathroom and everything, use the restroom or whatnot. But so what did this article say?
So this article, it's a survey which was provided by Expedia. So they conducted a survey of travelers from 11 countries. And once they sifted through the data, they found that Japanese travelers were on the extreme end of the responses for two questions. So the first question was, what makes you feel the most uneasy or stressed when flying on an airplane? And 26% of Japanese respondents selected sitting next to someone I don't know. But in second place, not far off, was with 22%, was your fellow people, Burke. So, yeah, I mean, 26%, 22%, not too much of a difference, but they also felt stress when sitting next to strangers. How about yourself? Do you like flying?
No, I hate flying. I think it's one of the scariest things possible. It's probably because I read a book at one point of like how to survive a plane crash that basically talked about like all the scenarios where planes have crashed in the past and like gave all this advice about how to survive.
Why would you read that? Was that like just before getting on your first ever trip or something?
It was like back in those early days of being in Japan and you're like kind of lonely on like a Sunday, have a bad hangover from going out to Suskino the night before, so you go to the bookstore to kind of like check out magazines and stuff, and you look at the English book section, and that was one of the books in the English book section, I think, so I
just like, jumped out to you.
So I was like, oh, this might be interesting, so I got that, and yeah, bad choice, never read about it. Yeah,
I've never even thought about that before. Like, I actually really enjoy flying, and yeah, I've never thought like a plane would ever crash with me on it. But I do like kind of watching plane disaster movies, especially when I'm actually flying in the plane as well. Always kind of quite fun. It's like this is never going to happen, but obviously when it does, you know, it's game over anyway, so I just kind of don't really worry about it.
What about like on social media? I know you don't use social media too much, but like on social media, Instagram or Facebook or anything, did you ever start watching like those short videos about plane disasters?
No. I guess apart from the one, you know, the JAL one recently in Japan, that's probably the only one I followed where the plane was coming in, right, and they hit a plane that was already grounded. But that's a bit different, right, when you're actually in the air and experience a plane crash like that. Never seen those social media videos. I'm assuming you have.
I would not recommend them again. I'm like worried about
it's like you enjoy that stuff or something. Get a bit of a thrill.
It might be a little bit of that, but especially now I'm traveling with family, like I'm worried about like twice as much now. But like turbulence, you ever seen those videos of like turbulence happening, people go flying, the ones that don't have their seatbelts on, they fly up and hit their heads and get knocked out?
No, I haven't seen that.
Injury and stuff. So that's why I'm like always wearing seatbelt.
I've always worn a seatbelt, but I've experienced bad turbulence, but not where people are flying into the ceiling and stuff.
Yeah, that's the thing about this article. It was unfortunate because I did a lot of searching. I tried to find the actual survey for this to see what other options there were, because it didn't really mention what the other choices were. It did say like, you know, Japanese people get stressed sitting next to someone I know, but it didn't say like what other things stress people. But I was kind of curious to know, because I've got a lot of stuff that's stressing me on flights and everything.
But does sitting next to someone you don't know, does that kind of stress you out a little bit?
a little bit, but not too majorly. But I will say, like, immediately sit down, and it's like, all right, how do I establish my dominance on the armrest?
Oh, yeah, that's important. Yeah, you got, well, I don't know, what is the, there's kind of an unspoken rule, right? I always assume that you have to have one of the armrests, either the left or the right. So if you're in the middle, you got to choose one. You can't have both if you're in the center.
Yeah, but the people on the other side don't know if you've claimed the one on the other side yet.
But is it, that's what I mean. Isn't there like a...
unspoken rule?
Yeah, like which one you should have. Because the person on the left, obviously, if it's a three-seater plane, the person on the left side of you has the left one. The person on the right side of you has the right one. So you should have your choice, right? It should be your choice in the middle.
Oh, I see. Yeah, but still, like, if you choose the left one, the person on the right doesn't know that you've chosen.
Guess two.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my rule for the armrest is this, like, there's one person who gets their elbow at the back, very back of the armrest, and somebody who can sit in front of that. And that seems to work, yeah.
So how do you decide who gets the front and the back?
Well, I let the person put their elbow wherever they want to, and then I just put mine.
So you let them decide?
Yeah, well, usually. I mean, unless it's like a really large person, larger than me, usually they need to put their elbow further forward, so I'll establish dominance on the back.
But right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so the survey conducted by Expedia doesn't ask respondents why they felt stressed sitting next to a stranger. But apparently it's not hard to think of a few likely reasons for Japanese travelers. Mm. So according to this article, as a compact island country with an efficient and convenient high-speed rail system, domestic travelers in Japan overwhelmingly opt for taking trains. So for many Japanese travelers, flying is practically synonymous with international travel. Many people in Japan are painfully aware that the country on average isn't particularly skilled with foreign languages, and also that proportionally not all that many people outside Japan can communicate easily in Japanese. So this can result in them being nervous talking to someone they don't know.
That's understandable. Like, language issues for Japanese people probably could make them nervous. But I mean, to say like Japanese people associate flying with international travel only, I mean, considering all the businessmen that have to fly all over the country, domestically at least, for like for shucho, for business trips and stuff, I don't think like Japanese people associate flying only with international travel. But I would agree that the language issues definitely could be a big reason for them to become nervous. But there was another Expedia article in 2019 interviewed 18,000 travelers from 23 countries, and this said the Japanese are the least likely to talk to strangers or offer help on airplanes. So again, this might also be related to language issues. But any guesses? This was 23 countries. Of which country is most likely to start talking to a stranger in a neighboring seat on an airplane?
Like starting small talk?
Yes. Have you ever done that before, by the way?
I have. I don't do it anymore. But when I was younger, I guess I was a bit more, you know, outgoing and look forward to like meeting people. But the older I've got, it's like I just don't want to be. Yeah.
I go straight to the movies.
I've got enough friends, you know. But yeah, I would, especially if the, you know, person was an attractive female, I'd be like, yeah, well up for it. Yeah, I used to be excited about, you know, who's going to be sitting next to me today on my flights. But yeah, these days, I don't really talk to people. No small talk. And maybe when I'm landing, because I know I'm only going to be talking to them for at least 10 or 15 minutes. Because you don't want to start it when you get on the plane, because you might not like them. And then it's kind of gets awkward how to end the conversation.
You know what? I would get really upset if somebody started talking to me during that time. You know why?
Takeoff time?
Takeoff or landing. Do you know why?
Why?
That's when most plane accidents occur, according to my research. So I'd be like, I'm in prep mode for disaster at that point.
You're focused.
Yeah, don't talk to me. It's me and the flight attendants are trying to watch what's going on right now, okay?
So you just like, you've got your mind on something else, yeah. And someone's like yapping in
try
your
to
ear.
Talk to me about stuff. any guesses on which country the people are most likely to talk to?
Most likely to start.
Paper.
Maybe maybe Chinese, an Asian country. The Chinese like to talk. Mm. Hong Kong people, possibly.
Surprisingly, Hong Kong was near the bottom.
Like close to Japan.
Yeah, actually second from the bottom. Japan was least likely at 15%, and Hong Kong was second at 24%. Most likely were people from India at 60%, followed by Mexico, 59%, Brazil, 51%. So,
wow.
Yeah.
What about our countries? Were they in that list?
Australia, surprisingly, was fourth from the bottom at 27%. And I didn't check to see where US or UK are at. But surprisingly, most likely to offer assistance with overhead luggage, Australia was 50%. Japan was least likely at 24%. Most likely to offer travel recommendations, Japan was again at the bottom at only 3%.
Wow.
India was at the top at 38%. How about this one? Most likely to give up a spot in the security checkpoint for someone who's running late, Brazil was most likely at 31%, and Japan was least likely at 5%.
Again, at the bottom of the survey.
Yeah, would you ever give up your spot for somebody who's running late if you're standing on security?
Like, yeah, hey, probably. I mean, depends how panicky they were. If they're like, you know, our flight is leaving now and we have to get through. And if, I mean, I've had it before where I've been in that situation. And the flight staff or the cabin crew, not the cabin crew, I guess the airport staff, they were telling people to let us through. And in that situation, I guess you don't really have a choice.
Right.
You can't really get angry about that, right?
Yeah. If somebody runs up, if they have kids, I'll let them in. But if it's just like some rando.
One dude.
Yeah, probably like, too bad, buddy.
Get the back of the line.
Is this fake, like I don't speak English or something? I don't know.
What about helping people put up their luggage? I do that quite often.
I did that. And actually, there was a Japanese woman on when we traveled over the year end who asked me for help putting our stuff up there. And I was glad to help because, you know, not too many people ask the short guy to help them put stuff up there. But I did
couldn't
help
do it. Out. You like ask for help from someone else.
Exactly. That's when the flight attendant showed up. The thing is like after we landed, I again like went to help like get it down before she actually asked me. And it seemed like she was a little bothered that I helped get it down. So she wasn't, or I don't know, maybe it's because she had just woken up or something, but she definitely was not as friendly when I helped her get it down.
That's so interesting. Did you have any small talk with her during the flight?
No, she was sitting a few rows back, actually. So, yeah.
Yeah, so here's a bit of an anecdote from the article. On a recent flight back to the States, a Japanese woman sitting in a row was cheerfully amazed when her American boyfriend and the writer of this article, who were complete strangers, got into a conversation simply by nature of realizing that they were both from Southern California. So yeah, she was quite amazed by that, just, you know, talking to strangers. But I think that's happened to me a couple of times. You know, I wouldn't be amazed if I saw that. And if it's, but it seems like, yeah, this Japanese woman was surprised. Or maybe she was more jealous. Angry.
You know what's actually a big problem? And it wasn't mentioned here, but it was mentioned in another article. But there's actually a lot less Japanese travelers going overseas, apparently, recently. You heard anything about that?
I haven't read anything about it, but according to, you know, talking to my students, a lot of them seem less eager to travel overseas these days, especially I've kind of felt that in the last 5 or 6 years or so. Like they're not interested so much in learning English. They don't mind going overseas as long as there's kind of like a Japanese English speaking countries, like Hawaii, for example. They love going there, places like that, Korea. Yeah, but yeah, tendency not to want to travel so much.
Ooh, it's interesting that you said that because I'll explain in a bit. There's not too many going overseas, but the top travel destinations for Japanese people during the year-end holiday that just finished a couple months ago. You mentioned Korea, and Seoul was number one destination, and you also mentioned Hawaii. Honolulu was number three, Taipei was number two, and other Asian countries like Bangkok is in here, number four, Singapore, number seven, Guam, close to Japan, but U.S. territory. Yeah, it's number five. But apparently, according to JTB, which we know is a major travel agency, during this year-end holiday period of 2023, number of Japanese travelers going overseas was only 70% of pre-pandemic levels in 2019. And you just mentioned some of your students gave, explained why they weren't as motivated, but any guesses on the major reasons given for why people are traveling less overseas, Japanese people?
Safety, maybe, is one.
Safety was not mentioned, but that definitely has come up with people I know in Japan talking about, like, especially safety in the U.S. and stuff. But that was not mentioned.
Weak yen.
Ooh, that was number one, yeah. Which is a good reason because, yes, when yen is super weak right now. So wherever you go, you're going to be paying a lot more if you're a Japanese person.
Yeah. English must be in there.
Well, that wasn't mentioned in here, but that was mentioned in those other articles about, like, just kind of being mendokusai to have to travel in English.
Mm.
They mentioned not being able to get time off from work. Just saying that planning an actual foreign holiday is difficult. That probably relates to the English thing.
Or I got one. Food. Lack of Japanese food.
Oh, then why do you say that?
They'll miss it too much.
Yeah. Everyone who I used to go on business trips with, Japanese guys for like a week business trip overseas, they would all bring like tons of instant ramen.
Yeah.
Miso soup packages.
Every time we travel, my wife always takes, miso soup package, some nori, maybe some, not onigiris, but definitely kind of like Japanese snacks. Because, yeah, she says she can't live without that stuff, without Japanese food.
Yeah, like all those guys. I mean, we'd be going to some good countries overseas, like in Europe, Italy, Germany, some of the Nordic countries. And they'd be super excited about eating the food over there for like the first 2 days. And by like day three, they'd be like, I need washoku. I need Japanese food, you know, like. Other reasons they talked about, still a little bit of worries about COVID, geopolitical tensions, and this is a really good one, I think. They're just happy to vacation in Japan. Like, why go overseas when you got all these great places to travel within Japan? But in tandem with this, and I didn't know this, because we've talked about the Japanese passport being one of the strongest, right? Used to be the strongest, and now number one is
Singapore.
But surprisingly, the number of passport holders in Japan is also pretty low. Before the pandemic, it was already low at only 23-25%, which is lowest of all G7 nations. But in 2022, it had dropped all the way down to 17%. And I've even heard numbers of 15% most recently. So, like, hardly anyone holds passports in Japan.
Wow, 15%. That's pretty low.
Yeah. And they said that the number of Japanese visitors going to Hawaii, which is kind of known within Japan as a popular destination. In Japan, the number of visitors going to Hawaii, Japan ranked fourth behind Canada, Mexico, and the UK.
Mm.
I guess there's actually a lot of Americans there, but they can't say that it's like overseas people.
Right.
But in 2022, Japan had fallen all the way down to 13th, which is behind even India. People from India and people from Korea traveling to Hawaii. So, yeah, I see a lot of people.
That must have a lot to do with the price, the weekend, because Hawaii is not a cheap place. I mean, I've never been, but every time I want to go, I'll look at the flights and the hotels, and then it's the spending money. So I'm kind of priced out of Hawaii, which is why I tend to choose. We're going to Taipei, which is number two.
Ooh,
on that list.
Nice.
At the end of the month, because it's relatively cheaper than Hawaii or Guam, somewhere like that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, this says that apparently Japanese travelers tend to spend more time overseas than people from other countries, which means more spending. So now countries like the U.S., Australia, Vietnam, and other countries are introducing campaigns to get the Japanese tourists back. So, yeah, everybody wants the Japanese tourists.
So they spend more money.
Yeah, well, because apparently their time overseas or the duration of their trips is usually longer, which is kind of surprising because
I can't get much time off of work. Yeah, I mean, I don't know many Japanese people that go on vacation longer than a week.
Usually
the week is the most that they can get. Any longer than that and they'll probably lose their jobs. Usually get fired or something.
Yeah, maybe JTB doesn't know what they're talking about.
There was another question that this Expedia survey asked, and it was, do you get into arguments with the people who you are traveling with? So family, friends. And Japan was at the top of this number that said no, that said yes, sorry, that said no. So the lowest number.
They do not get an argument.
They do not. 14% said that they do. It's only 14%. It's at the bottom. Next was Mexico at 20%. Your country and my country is in this list. Where do you think your country would be, Burke?
Sorry, those countries you were just saying were at the no side, on the no side?
On the, so do you get into arguments with people who you're traveling with? 14% of Japanese people said yes. 20% of Mexicans said yes.
Okay, and that's like the low end.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to say Americans and maybe Brits as well are pretty close to the top, if not the top.
Americans are at the top.
At the top. We're number one.
UK was third the top, yeah. So UK 28%, but the Americans, a big 58% of them said they argue with the people they're traveling with.
Well, finally, this makes sense. I was wondering why my wife won't argue with me trying again, because she's Japanese.
You're trying to argue and she doesn't want to.
I'm like, honey, it's part of a vacation. We're supposed to get at least three big arguments.
Yeah, I don't know, like, what it's like in when you're traveling domestically in America. Is that, similar on planes? Are people arguing the whole time? Half the plane?
The videos are everywhere, man. Yeah.
Man, do you remember that video of Mike Tyson, like, punching that dude out? Because he just kept, like, annoying him or something. And like, I think he wanted to get punched by Mike Tyson.
Something like that, yeah.
Because someone was filming it. Right?
Yeah. Everyone gets, that's actually one of the things that stresses me out a lot. Whenever I'm traveling the U.S., I'm like, man, is there going to be an argument on the plane? What's going to happen?
What are they arguing over? Is it elbow space? Who gets the armrest?
Man, I think it's anything and everything. And even now this year is probably going to be about political stuff and everything. You know, like, I just want to argue about everything. I think everyone's tense already because the service in the airports is so horrible that they're already upset. And then they get on the plane. And then the service obviously isn't that great. And then you just have one argument about a little bit of something, crying babies.
Yeah, it's definitely not very relaxing going on a flight, I would say, these days, especially when you're going through, you know, customs, you're going through security. Yeah, and if it's slow, and I think, I don't know if America's still the same, where you have to take off all your shoes, your belts.
Yes.
Japan's like that too. England, I remember you had to divide like your perfumes and things into like small bottles, put them in a plastic bag.
All right, yeah.
So any liquids you had to divide up. So if you didn't do that before you go through check-in, then that's going to take up a lot of time.
Yeah, you said like in Japan, like you have to take off your shoes and stuff. But that's just for like international travel. Like for people who are not in the country and don't know, like traveling domestically within Japan is like it's – I don't even think it's been – that relaxed as it is in Japan, like ever in the U.S. I mean, basically, like, yeah, like you just breeze through security, everything, just like give your boarding passes to the people. They like will do it for you. They'll do the little beep and check the barcode for you. And we travel with kids all the time, so they like take super good care of us. They put us on the express line all the time.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Forward. So
yeah, and usually you're 20 minutes before gate closing, you can go in. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is pretty insane. I don't know what it's like in our countries, actually. I've never flown domestically in England before. America, I don't know if you have, like, what is it like going through security? Does it take as long as, like, international travel or something?
Yeah. I haven't flown domestically. I've had domestic transfers, but I mean, just in a trip that we took last year, we got to the gate and we're so tired from, like, moving around that we didn't even realize that they were boarding. And they sold our seats to somebody else, and they let them get on the plane, and they shut the door. And then we like realized what was going on. We thought it was the flight before us that was boarding, you know, because we were kind of made a mistake with the time, basically, because of the jet lag, not the jet lag, but the time difference. And yes, yeah, so we got to the gate, and we thought it was like the flight before us that was boarding on the plane, but it was actually our flight.
Where were you going?
We were flying from, I think it was like San Francisco to Phoenix.
And they sold your flight?
Yeah.
Wow.
They sold our seats to somebody else. They didn't even like, I mean, they know there's supposed to be like a family of four getting on the flight. And we were like basically sitting like next to the counter. And they didn't like, is anyone here? Is
no announcement.
Porter family? No, they do. I mean, and you know what? I even asked them. I was like, we didn't hear an announcement. And the lady said that they can't do that anymore because of some like security reason or something. And then, like, within, like, 10 minutes, I heard some other gate, like, calling for the people. Like, are you, you know, like, they were searching for the, so it was just like, I think, you know, they want to do that because they oversell the flights, the yeah. seats, and they want to, you know.
So what did they do in the end? Did they refund you? Or?
They put us on the next flight, yeah. But it was, like, a horrible thing to do because we had already been, like, traveling from Japan. We were exhausted and stuff.
Then so. You're angry, then you get into arguments.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Start complaining to other passengers.
Yeah, so there you go. Yeah. Wonderful service of the U.S. airports.
There we go.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Well, just a couple quick things, as we have talked about over tourism. I know how you feel about tourists in Japan.
I have noticed in the month of March, fewer tourists, so I've been happy about that, like going around downtown, not so many people.
I thought you were going to say, I've kind of like changed my thoughts about tourists, I don't mind them too much, but you're just like less, so you're happy.
Yeah, less is good. But there are, yeah, the mountains been quieter, which is nice as well. Mm. But there are still a lot of tourists around, but I just don't feel like it's over tourism now in the month of March. Usually is the case in Sapporo.
Yeah, these are kind of like the worst months to come here, so probably the reason why not too many people are here. Snow is melting, it's very dirty and gray. But Kyoto, the city we've talked about before, who is dealing with a lot of over tourism, apparently the geisha district, Gion district, is fighting against over tourism with keep out signs. They're going to put up keep out signs in the famous geisha district starting from April. The public streets in the neighborhood will not have the signs, but they will be put up in private alleyway roads. There will be fines of ichiman, 10,000 yen, which is about $70 at today's rate. And the geisha district, is known for its winding alleyways and picturesque tea houses where geisha and maiko apprentices wearing fancy kimono and hair ornaments perform and dance and music. But these complaints actually started before the coronavirus pandemic. And recently the local council summarized the less than eager sentiments that they have for tourists a few months ago by proclaiming Kyoto is not a theme park. So there you go. Kyoto is, yeah.
So keep out of these, I guess, what, they're private areas?
Apparently.
Mainly.
Yeah, there's like the little shops on the main roads and then kind of these side roads where it's probably residences and people who live there. I guess they're calling them private alleyway roads. Yeah.
I can imagine probably a lot of tourists just, you know, jumping over and trying to get videos of the geishas and the maikos, right, for their Instagram videos and things like that.
Yeah, apparently, I mean, that's part of their job is to, like, you know, entertain people. So you're not really supposed to just go and try and use them for free. And apparently a lot of people, like, try and touch the kimono and, and other things.
Big no-no.
Excited. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And then the second thing they're doing, they're considering launching a tourist express bus to handle overcrowding. This bus service would take tourists from the main Kyoto train station to popular tourist spots such as Kiyomizu-dera Temple and the Gion District, which we were just talking about. Prices would be 500 yen for adults, 250 yen for children, which are both about double the price of a regular bus. And they will also have a single day pass for 1,100. But some people are saying it's not that there's too many people riding the buses, it's just there's too many cars on the road in general in Kyoto. Bad urban planning But man, I think this is a great idea. If I were a tourist, I don't know, how would you be willing to pay a little bit extra to get like an express bus to go straight to your location?
Yeah, definitely. Like, and then you don't kind of interfere with the daily life of the locals as well. So keeping the wah around. Mm-hmm. I guess it depends on how much extra you're paying. But if it's not too expensive, yeah, why not? And the cheap yen. You know, what, 1,000 yen or something like that?
Yeah, well, yeah, 500 for adults, 250 for children. Apparently, they have these circle buses in Tokyo already, and everyone is a big fan of them. Me personally, I wouldn't mind using the express bus. I do like riding the local buses sometimes, just kind of see like what life is like in another city that's not Sapporo, you know? but yeah, I think this is they should probably get this in Sapporo as well.
Oh, man, they should probably do that in every kind of major city that has a lot of tourists. I mean, especially for the winter season, I think it'd be really helpful for all the local mountains, or not even the local mountains, just all the ski mountains, to have like a special bus system for tourists.
Just for the tourists.
Yeah, because right? They have one for the locals or ones for the locals, but that bus gets packed so quickly and you're queuing up. I think it was like a couple of weeks ago, I waited in line for an hour at the bus to get to the mountain because the queue was so long, and then the buses are kind of small, so they can only fit on a certain amount of people. So if you miss that first bus, next bus is like, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes away. And if that one's full, then the next bus and so on and so forth.
Yeah, well, imagine if you're like just trying to get to work, which is apparently a lot of the situation these people in Kyoto, the residents are facing in Kyoto. They just want to get to work. And like the bus comes, it's packed, nobody can get on. Next bus comes, two people can get on and they're at the end of the line. Yeah, so they can't even get to work in some cases.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, going back to our original topic, Japanese travelers more stressed than others sit next to strangers. Any solutions to what do you think of how to relieve the stress of sitting next to a stranger on a plane?
Well, I kind of feel aren't like a lot of Japanese people who are traveling overseas, like a lot of them kind of because they're interested in trying to use English or something, right? Anyways, so maybe just I think I kind of saw something in there. One possible solution is just giving a nice friendly smile to somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then maybe you can even say hi, and if they reciprocate with the response, then maybe you could strike up a conversation a little bit.
Yeah, I think the, you know, like you're saying, you know, it's a good motivation to actually practice English, right? Yeah. Maybe see it that way. It's like, okay, and because when you're actually on your trip, you probably won't be able to use English as much because a lot of Japanese people go through tour groups. So they have less chances to actually use the English. I know one friend I know, he said every time he travels, he always goes through a tour group because he can't speak any English. And he kind of feels a bit shitty about it because he should, you know, try to speak English by himself. But he says without those tour groups, he can't really do anything because he can't book anything. Everything's in English. He can't find anywhere to go because everything online is all in English and stuff. But yeah, so see that as an opportunity to practice some.
Mm. So yeah, maybe just at least give like a friendly smile or nod just to maybe break the ice a little bit.
Alcohol also helps, you know, usually on the long haul flights, free drinks.
Offer your alcohol to the person next to you.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, that is a good idea. But yeah, I was going to say maybe wait till the end so they don't feel like stressed, like they're going to have to deal with talking to you for the whole flight. But I don't know, that kind of maybe doesn't help too much if you're trying to take their stress away. Maybe you want to do something at the beginning. So yeah, just a friendly hello or a smile, I think, is probably the best.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I spoke to someone on the plane. I think it's been a while. I haven't been able to sit next to any hotties, so I think that's probably why. So yeah, maybe find someone attractive to sit next to, or hope someone attractive, and that might inspire you to talk to them.
Ben, always planning ahead.
Anyways, I think we are up to that time. I hope you enjoyed this episode, everyone. And yeah, if you are flying and you find yourself sitting next to a Japanese person, maybe strike up a conversation, you know, because they might be a little bit nervous.
Say hello. Sounds good.
All right, well, thanks for listening. Catch you next time.
Bye-bye.